Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest today is Mohammed Marandi. Mohammed is a professor at Tehran University. Trying to get Mohammed on the line now. Seem to be having a little bit of trouble getting through to him. My studio will cue me when he is on so I can begin the discussion with Mohammed. Been a good while since I've had him on. He was one of the ones I had scheduled before a funny thing happened to me on the way to my radio program. I took ill. And I got back last Sunday. It was wonderful getting back on air again. I did that program, the one today. I pre-recorded two others. All my programs, there are three a week. One is live on Sunday. On Thursdays, I pre-record two others, and they're all available in my archives on PRN's website. So anybody can listen to this program live or listen to all of them at listeners' convenience, which really makes it very easy. And, of course, this program is devoted to discussing the big issues of the day. So much is going on in the Middle East. Mohammed lives in the region. He knows the region very well. He studies it. He writes about it. He teaches it. He's a marvelous guest to discuss it. I hope we can get him on without too much trouble. Still trying to get him. I don't know why we're having a problem. There was one other time I had a problem getting Mohammed on. I hope the studio host will pull a few rabbits out of the hat and get Mohammed on the line. Can't be that tough to dial a telephone number and get through to somebody. And I can't imagine that Mohammed has got his lines tied up. He's got two of them. He certainly isn't talking on both of them at the same time. So there's got to be at least one free to be able to reach him. So let's just keep trying nonstop and then cue me when he's on. But there's so much going on, the Gaza situation, that absolutely obsesses me. When I was ill for 2 months, I was offline. I had no computer. And these major things were happening, the Gaza story, the Ukraine story continuing. And I couldn't add my voice to others that were discussing this thing and telling people what they needed to know, instead of the garbage, which is all I could get when I was hospitalized, when I was in rehab, CNN, Fox, MSNBC, the broadcasters, garbage, cable channels, round-the-clock broadcasters, whenever they do it. I don't pay too much attention to them. They have evening news. I don't know what they have in the morning. Nothing during the day, as far as I know. But garbage, nonstop, certainly from the cable channels. And if you wanted to know what was false, you followed them. And if you wanted to know what was happening, the truth, you went to the alternative media, like this program, which unfortunately did not air during that two-month period, but others did. And many good people were writing and discussing the truth about what was going on in Gaza. And there's no ambiguity about it. It's the same dirty scenario every time. Israel launches cold, calculated, premeditated aggression, blames Hamas and other resistance groups for its crimes. The corporate media, U.S. Public Radio, National Public Radio, Britain's BBC, Qatar's Al Jazeera, pick up on the official lie and repeat it ad nauseum. Again, you've got to go to the alternative media to know what's going on. But the truth is, as I stated it, Hamas, number one, is not a terrorist organization, despite the propaganda claiming it. It's the legitimate government of Palestine, democratically elected in January 2006. The Abbas government in the West Bank, Fatah, is an illegitimate government. Israel rigged Abbas's election in 2005. His term expired in January 2009. He refuses to call new elections. He's been a longtime Israeli collaborator, at least going back to the pre-Oslo days leading up to the Oslo Accords. The late Edward Said called it a Palestinian Versailles, unconditional surrender to Israeli demands. That's Mahmoud Abbas. That's why he gets along so well with the Israeli government, has meetings with Netanyahu, gets Oval Office visits. When you're a collaborator, you get those benefits. And when you fight for freedoms, you get marginalized, you get called a terrorist organization, you get attacked, you get murdered, And, of course, that's what went on in Gaza. Mohammed, I guess we have you connected now. Mohammed?
Good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon for me and good evening for you. Mohammed, it's wonderful
to
have you back.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
I don't know when you Mohammed, I don't know when you got on, but I was talking about the situation in Gaza, which, and of course, so-called ceasefire talks are ongoing in Cairo. All sides took a short break. There were two 72-hour ceasefires. We're in a five-day ceasefire now that continues until midnight local time Monday. So we're still in it now. Both sides took a break, or all sides, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, the other resistance fighters, and the Israelis took a break to go home and discuss the situation with their leaders. And now they're back in Cairo. I have an article that I got out this morning updating what's going on in Cairo. I discussed information that I knew and could find out. Things are really not exactly 100% clear, but let me get your comments on what's going on and what you see happening and the outlook that you see going forward in terms of resolving or not resolving the Gaza conflict, Mohammed.
Well, first, I think it's important to point out to your audience that the biggest loser of the war in Gaza was the United States, because unlike Americans who could not really see what was going on in Gaza, and American television networks were really picking and choosing footage to put the Israeli regime in the best light possible, the rest of the world was watching the genocide taking place on a daily and hourly basis, where children were being slaughtered left, right, and center. So the United States and Obama, by supporting the genocide of the Gazan people, are really the biggest losers in the eyes of the international community and global public opinion. And that's very sad, because I'm sure that ordinary Americans, if they had seen the scenes that people across the globe were watching, they too would be outraged by Obama's support for the regimes and also the support of the American political establishment for Zionist genocide in Gaza. But what really is happening now is that the Israeli regime has also been a big loser in all this, because they did not achieve any of their objectives in Gaza. They thought that it would be they would achieve an easy victory, and that Hamas, for whatever reason, and that's a story in itself, is too weak to really defend Gaza. And they were surprised, because the defenses, the tunnels, and the networks that the resistance had created in Gaza were very extensive, very effective. The Israelis were taking large numbers of military casualties, and they failed to even enter any part of Gaza nor stop the missile attacks, so which were done in retaliation. And we have to remember that this whole war was started by the Israelis, who knowingly falsely accused Hamas of killing three Israeli teenagers. And even these three teenagers were killed after two Palestinian teenagers were killed by Israelis. But that's another story. The point is that what the Gazans are right now saying is that we will not accept silence for silence. In other words, a ceasefire just for the sake of a ceasefire, because the Israelis had imposed an embargo on Gaza, a blockade, with the help of the EU and the United States, where the Gazan people for years have not been able to bring in food, adequate supplies of food, or other or adequate supplies. And this has made Gaza for a decade now, almost like a concentration camp. So the Gazans are now saying that the Israelis had made the mistake of starting a war on ordinary people, but they cannot end the war whenever they want. The blockade has to end. In other words, The Gazans must be allowed to have an airport, to have a functioning port, under international supervision. But they will not go back to the status quo where the Israelis were allowed to have the people of Gaza by the throat. That's where things stand right now.
Mohammed, I agree with you, and what I include in my article was a discussion of points exactly like this, where Hamas, Islamic Jihad, against the other resistance groups, not the PA in Ramallah, but the people fighting for the freedoms they don't have, absolutely want the siege to end. They want to be able to live a normal life. They want the justice they've been long denied, and they're really holding out for this. At the same time, they know that there's been about 2,000 Palestinians killed, about 10,000 wounded. Large parts of Gaza have been left in ruins, and they certainly don't want to go back and see many more Palestinians killed and the violence continue ad nauseum, just continuing without end. They want an end to the violence, but they don't want to have gone through all of this misery and come out of it achieving nothing, or the way I like to put it, too little to matter. Israel throwing a few crumbs, a little benefit here, a little benefit there. And the history of Israel in all the agreements it makes, it systematically begins violating them, usually straight away and usually multiple times daily. And that's exactly what happened in the aftermath of November 2012, Operation Pillar of Cloud. One of the things agreed on was free movement of people and goods in Gaza, and Israel systematically violated that. So this has come up again as one of the deals being negotiated now, without talking about a siege or a blockade, but facilitating the movement of people and goods. And I absolutely believe Israel is lying. Whatever they say, they won't follow through on. The people, the Palestinians in Gaza, 1.7 or 1.8 million of them, they want the freedom to buy the goods they want. They want to be able to visit their relatives in the West Bank. They want to be able to have an education overseas. They want to be able to get medical care in other places. They want to live like normal human beings. And if Israel doesn't grant them that, then what kind of a deal do they have? Do they have no deal at all? And I think Israel categorically will deny them that justice. So we're right back to square one again. And even if things subside and there's no more fighting for a while, whatever does come out of this thing, the violations will occur on Israel's side. The violence will continue sporadically. And at some point, so many months, a year or two or whatever, we'll have another operation, Protective Edge, with a new name, and many more Palestinians will die, and Gaza will be leveled again. And what have Palestinians accomplished? Nothing. If they don't settle it now, Mohammed, maybe they'll never settle it.
Well, you know, one of the other things that should have added, during this war, the Israelis have been more explicitly racist and genocidal in their statements than ever before. And this, too, is not reflected in the American media, where Israeli MPs, members of parliament, were saying kill all the mothers of all the Palestinians so that they cannot bear any more snakes. Others were saying wipe the Gaza off the face of the map and, you know, have the survivors leave the territory, leave Gaza. In other words, ethnic cleansing, and that sort of language we've been seeing from deputy heads of political parties in Israel, MPs, government officials, absolutely disgusting, and none of it reflected in the Western media. Yet, on the other hand, one of the amazing things that also happened was that when Hamas, it was believed that Hamas or Islamic Jihad had captured an Israeli soldier. The Obama administration said that this is a barbaric act because the Israelis claimed that it happened during a ceasefire, and Hamas said actually, or the resistance said that it hadn't. But in any case, Americans were saying this is a barbaric act, the fact that they captured a soldier who was a part of an army that was slaughtering civilians. Yet for 3 weeks, for almost a month actually, the Israelis were bombing people's houses day and night, slaughtering families, 15 children, 10 children, 5 children at a time. And never did the Americans call this barbaric. So the alleged murder of a soldier was barbaric, and they called on them to release the soldier as the Israelis were slaughtering the Palestinians. Yet no criticism of this. That shows the utter sickness of current American political order and the current president of the United States, who is guilty of war crimes just as much as the Israeli regime, especially since the U.S. government allowed the Israeli regime to use stocks of weapons that the United States had in Israel. But I'd also like to point out that at this, you know, at the same time, while the Americans are allowing Israel to carry out genocide, as we on this show discussed on numerous occasions before, the American thought of extremists in Syria that we've been talking about for years now, their support for ISIL, the support for the Nusra Front, the Islamic, all these extremists alongside with the Saudis and the Qataris, we've always been saying that this is going to lead to a regional catastrophe. And now we see it happen. Now they've come and taken huge swathes of Iraq. So the United States, on the one hand, supports genocide in Israel. On the other hand, through its client regimes like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and places like Turkey, they succeeded in destroying Syria, and they've created another monster, meaning ISIL or Daesh, that has destroyed the whole region and now is a global threat. So this monster that they've unleashed upon the Syrian government is now out of control, and even regimes like Saudi Arabia are now fearful. So, and it's not just Syria or Iraq, it's also Libya, which has been destroyed thanks to the United States and NATO, thanks to the British and French and German governments. But no one bears responsibility. The United States and its government and its allies continue to say that we are the good guys, we are there to help people, but in reality they cause nothing but death and destruction. Even when ISIL was taking city after city in Iraq, the United States did not support the central government. They only launched attacks on ISIL, which, when they thought they were moving towards American interests in the Kurdish territories. So, American policy is extraordinary. It promotes extremism in this region. And then at the end of the day, it wonders why. And then the region collapses, it's destroyed, people's lives are wrecked, and many, many endless numbers of people die. And then the Western media says, these Muslims are uncivilized, they cannot run their own affairs. Well, thanks to the United States, this is what's happened to this region. The extremism that we see now, these crazy ISIL people who behead people, whether Muslim, Christian, or of any other faith, all of them get their ideology from Saudi Arabia, a key U.S. ally in the region.
It really is shocking, and Americans know absolutely nothing about the reality on the ground, Mohammed. I saw the Islamic State, I guess they want to call themselves, or do call themselves. On the one hand, they're America's enemy now in Iraq, and at the same time, they're America's ally in Syria. Talk about hypocrisy. I mean, American hypocrisy just exceeds any other I can think of that I'm aware of, or ever read anything or researched. It is absolutely galling and disgusting, and the big lies that cover it up.
I mean, when these people were beheading people, sorry for interrupting, when these people for 2.5 years were beheading people in Syria, the Western media was not even discussing it. When these people for 2.5 years were slaughtering people, village after village in Syria, they were called freedom fighters.
Indeed.
They were being supported by the United States. And the Syrian government was demonized. Suddenly, the United States government, after almost 4 years of death and slaughter in Syria, now that this monster that they've helped create alongside Saudi Arabia and Qatar has gone out of control, you see it's become the number of the top news story in the West.
Well, how many of these people also in Syria?
Everyone knows that this death and slaughter has been going on for years now with the support of the United States government.
Oh, indeed so, Mohammed. I began saying, and these same Thai forces, whether it's ISIL or Al-Qaeda or Al-Nusra or whatever names some of these other people give themselves, they are the ones solely responsible for using chemical weapons, including the well-publicized one in Ghouta, August last year? Time goes by so fast. It was in August. I guess it must have been last year, about a year ago. They were guilty of the Ghouta chemical attack, but there were other chemical weapons attacks as well. And Syria, there is no evidence at all that Syria ever used chemical weapons a single time, and of course they're either all destroyed now or almost all of them destroyed. And these are the kind of things, the big lies proliferate, the truth gets systematically buried, the American public is dumbed down and knows nothing unless they listen to programs like this one or follow the alternative media and stay away from the CNNs of the world. And unfortunately, where I was for a couple of months, that's all I had, Mohammed. And the only thing I'll say for them in terms of the Gaza situation, it's the first time I can recall that Israel took any kind of flack at all in terms of what they did. And there actually were a few guests who were invited on by CNN, like Mustafa Baghouti, the independent legislator from Ramallah, who came on and said things that needed to be said on air. The only problem was he didn't get enough time. He got 2 or 3 minutes. He got invited back a few times, but instead of having him on for a few minutes and a few others like him, there were a few wonderful guests that CNN put on. But when you put on a guest like Saeb Erekat, who is a notorious traitor to the Palestinians in league with Abbas, both of them longtime Israeli collaborators, they come out and they mouth the right words, but behind the scenes, they're doing virtually nothing to stand up forthrightly against the massacre that was taking place. And I still haven't heard a decent comment from Abbas, absolutely denouncing unequivocally the slaughter, the genocidal slaughter that Israel committed. I haven't heard that yet. If he said it, it escaped my ears. But this is the stuff going on. And again, these people use, the hypocrisy is gross, the wars go on. A phrase I like to use all the time, Mohammed, is whenever America wherever America shows up, death and destruction follows. And in the post 9/11 era, it probably never was more true than that, other than in a world conflict like World War II or World War I. America got into late in the first one, was right there initiating the second one, and heaven help us if there's a third one, and there certainly is a possibility with the stuff going on in Ukraine and in the Middle East, anything is possible. But America is right in the middle of it all, and if America was determined to cut off the violence and have peace, we'd end these conflicts right away. But America is committed to violence, committed to war, committed to belligerence. There hasn't been a single year in American history that America has not been at war, either at home and or abroad. Not a single year of peace in the nation's history. And, of course, wars rage now. Obama, a peace president, give me a break.
Well, you know, one thing that I think is really important to keep in mind is that actually the American public has been, despite the fact that they're not fed information, the corporate media is tightly controlled, and the reality of what's going on outside the United States, and even inside the United States, is not really being told to Americans. But in the case of Syria, when the government, the U.S. government, was planning to attack Syria and Damascus, the American people were completely against the war. And, the Americans basically stopped Obama from carrying out the strikes, and also stopped Congress from authorizing or supporting the strikes. And if the American people had not put that pressure on the U.S. government then, imagine what the situation would be like today. In other words, if the U.S. government had destroyed the Syrian capital and the Syrian government, then those extremists that are now are going beyond everyone's control, they would have captured Syria. And if they had captured Syria and then gone to Iraq, the Iraqi government would have collapsed. So the fact that the American people blocked Obama's war of aggression on Syria, they helped prevent the collapse of Damascus, the takeover of the country by ISIL, and thus empowered ISIL from taking the whole of Iraq. So I think that in that sense, American people have played a major role in preventing this regional, if not global, catastrophe from becoming even worse than it is. And also I think that, you know, the situation in the United States, because of the injustice, because of the economic problems, because of the arrogance of the U.S. government by causing multiple international crises in Ukraine and in West Asia and Iraq and Syria and Libya, as well as with China and the South China Sea and so on, I think that the people in the United States who are facing, a very difficult economic period are becoming much more skeptical about what the media, the corporate media, has to say. The corporate media, which really represents the wealthy and the small minority of Americans. So what we see now in the United States is, I'm not completely optimistic. I don't want to be, say that people are now awake. But people are more aware of what's going on in the United States than they were a few years ago. And I think that that creates an opportunity.
It absolutely does, Mohammed, and I remember so well the overwhelming opposition to America bombing another country, whether it be Syria or anybody else, and the responses from congressional districts coming into to their representatives, 100 to 1 against, 200 to 1 against, 300 to 1 against, Democrats, Republicans, all the same. There was virtually nothing these congresspeople and senators could do but oppose America bombing Syria. Otherwise, their constituents would have come down on them hard. The overwhelming negativity against doing this was so strong. I was astonished just how strong it was. I wrote about it, and we stopped the war, and indeed, it was a very important thing to do, and of course, it hasn't cranked up again. Not that it might not in the future, Mohammed, but it certainly has stopped for now. And the last article I wrote before my two-month break was on the Syrian election that Abbas was absolutely, Assad. I keep getting Mahmoud Abbas and Bashir Assad, names mixed up. Bashir Assad was an absolute surefire thing to win, and he did win. And the only thing I didn't know was what was his margin of victory, and it turned out to be about 89% in what I believe was an absolutely legitimate democratic election. The longer the conflict went on, the more Syrians needed him to fight this monster that was ruining their lives, and they supported him overwhelmingly, gave him a resounding victory. I didn't see the responses in the major media because I didn't have access online, and I didn't even have a newspaper where I was at, so I really couldn't follow what was going on. I knew Assad won, but I didn't know how much. And it was two months later. It was really too late to write about an election that took place that much earlier. But it was wonderful to see that kind of a response. And he'll be president, I believe, for the next 7 years. But it's what Syrians want, and the citizens of a country alone have the right to decide who lead them. Not another country, no nation under international law may interfere in the internal affairs of another in any way, especially attacking them, except in self-defense. But America asserts the right to circumvent international law and do any damn thing it pleases. Sometimes public opinion puts them down, but usually it does what it wants to do. And look at the war now, the third Iraq war, Mohammed. There was no authorization for this war.
Yes, absolutely.
It's another illegal war, no Security Council resolution, another lawless aggression against the country posing no threat to America. Can I just say this? Let's take a brief break. I know you want to comment on this. Let's take a brief break. We'll come back and let you pick up where we leave off. Welcome back. Talking with Mohammed Marandi from Tehran University. Events in the Middle East. We talked about Gaza. We want to talk about Iraq. We did a little bit. We'll get more into it. But again, as I mentioned briefly, and I'll let you pick up on this, Mohammed, the only way a nation may attack another is if the Security Council authorizes it. Congress has no right whatsoever to decide if America can go to war or not. It does have to sign off on it. Only Congress can declare war in America, not presidents. But unless the Security Council authorizes an attack against another country, doing so is an act of lawless aggression. All the post 9/11 U.S. wars, Afghanistan, Iraq 2003, Libya, Obama's proxy war on Syria, all of them illegal wars of aggression. No authorization whatsoever. And of course, the third Iraq war since January 1991. Another one. Mohammed, let me let you jump in.
Well, you know, one of the, regardless of what, you know, what you say is absolutely correct. Even though the UN Security Council is not a democratic body itself, but even the UN Security Council is disregarded completely by the U.S. government whenever it wants to do something that the rest of the members don't accept. So, you know, the United States disregards international law. Yet it expects others to abide by its rules, or it wants Russia to abide by international law, for example, in Ukraine, and not to support the Russians who are being attacked by the Kiev government. Yet the United States supports extremists in Syria by funding them and by helping the Fataris and the Saudis to give them weapons. So, you know, the American double standards are what is bringing down the international order, because the United States itself is breaking it apart. It does not abide by the rules that it has itself helped to create, and rules that are actually biased towards the United States. If it cannot even accept those rules, then things are going to get worse and worse. But the point that I really think is important for Americans to focus on is that as long as the United States government remains a close ally of Saudi Arabia, of Qatar, and the other oil-rich Arab dictatorships in the Persian Gulf region, this situation is going to expand across the globe, because the Saudis support extremists across the globe. There is no difference between Boko Haram in Nigeria, the terrorists in Somalia, in Libya, ISIL in Iraq and Syria, the Nusrat Front in Syria, or the Taliban in Afghanistan, or Al-Qaeda, or the Taliban of Pakistan. They are all of one ideology. It is the Wahhabi ideology of Saudi Arabia. And the American government is silent about this, the American media is silent about this, and the reason is because Saudi wealth pours into the American banks, oil money, and also the Saudis are purchasing tens of millions of dollars a year of American weapons, and so are other countries, Arab dictatorships in the Persian Gulf, and they have, therefore, a very powerful in the United States, and many key politicians and former politicians and people of influence are on the Saudi side. But as long as the U.S. government allows the Saudis to export extremism, the situation is going to get worse. So what we have on the one hand in Iraq is the United States bombing, let's say, a couple of trucks in the north of Iraq, yet they allow the Saudis and others to fund an extremist ideology, an ideology that four decades ago was obscure. It wasn't mainstream in the Sunni world, in the Muslim world. But now, because of oil wealth and because of American and European support and silence, it has now become a major force. And as time goes by, these extremists will become more powerful, and then the United States, by carrying out foolish acts like supporting Israel and genocide, will anger ordinary people further, thus itself helping these extremists to gain more foot soldiers and simply make the situation worse. So unless the United States government stops supporting the Saudis and other oil-rich Arab dictatorships and the extremist ideology that they pursue, the situation is going to get worse. Unless the United States stops encouraging Israel to slaughter innocent people, the situation is going to get worse.
Yeah, he really will, Mohammed. Of course, with regard to the Saudis, as long as they have lots of oil and lots of money to buy American weapons, to make investments in America, to buy U.S. bonds, to do other things beneficial to the U.S. economy or politically, then Saudi Arabia will remain a strong U.S. ally. And as long as the Israeli lobby in America continues to have the enormous influence that it maintains, and it's a lot more than AIPAC, it's 52 Zionist organizations that have roots deep into the communities, big and small, across America, big cities, small towns, rural areas, incredible influence at the grassroots. As long as that continues, and it's been built over decades, and it maintains. So even though the Israeli Jewish population is rather small, certainly compared to the Christian population, I think there are more Muslims in America than Jews. Probably the populations are fairly equal in size. But of course, Muslims are demonized, and Jews are elevated to a high platform. And support for Israel is extreme, aside from the Jewish population, but the roots of America in all respects, the Christian community, the Jewish community, supports Israel right down the line, and great amounts of money go into promoting this, and it lets Israel, on the one hand, act as America's enforcer in the region when needed, and on the other hand, America comes to the aid of Israel no matter what it does, no matter what crimes it commits. The Palestinians have no power. They have no influence, so they get nothing. They get absolutely nothing.
Well, actually, I'd like to clarify something here. First of all, Saudi money does not help the American economy. It only helps the elites in the United States. Actually, U.S. policy in support of the Saudi regime hurts ordinary Americans because of the results of the support of extremism. But also, I'd like to add that the United States does not care. The U.S. government does not care about the Christian population in the Middle East. Actually, Assad was the president. Assad of Syria was the person who is the savior of the Christians of Syria. It was these extremists, ISIL and the Nusra Front, for 3 years, who've been beheading Christians all across Syria. It was actually Hezbollah in Lebanon that was supporting the Christians of Syria. The United States did nothing for 3.5 years when these extremists were slaughtering Christians in their villages. They did nothing when the Christians in Iraq were being bombed after the civil war in Iraq began during the U.S. occupation. Iraq had a very large Christian community, and it has been declining and declining year after year because of extremism, and even when the extremists took the north of Iraq and they were killing Christians, the U.S. government did nothing. It was only when ISIL went towards American interests in Arabian City, did the United States decide to carry out military strikes. So there's been no. It is the Muslim Iraqi government, the Muslim Syrian government, that was supporting the Christian minority that was being slaughtered by extremists funded by the Saudis and the Qataris, right in front of American and European eyes. So the United States really, they're indifferent towards innocent civilians. Mohammed, whether Muslim or Christian is utterly amazing.
I absolutely agree with you, and certainly America could do plenty. There are many thousands of U.S. forces in the region, naval forces, air forces, ground forces. If America wanted to do something, it's got all the firepower it needs to jump in and act and do something responsible. But the only thing America wants is total control over the region, especially the resources, the oil and gas. That's why it's there. If the oil and gas weren't there, America's interest in the region would be entirely different. But wherever there are resources that is valuable to America and its corporations, that's where America jumps in and acts, irrespective of the needs of the people who live there. They simply don't care about the people. They care about their own interests, and resources are right at the center of them. But, of course, also control. They want stooge governments subservient to Western interests. Any independent government is targeted for regime change to put in a subservient government, pro-Western, and so on. And this is the way America operates, not just in the region, but on a global basis. It's a pretty disgusting thing, because the bottom line, so often, if they can't depose a government by coup d'etat or assassination or other means, usually a war is waged, like against Iraq, against Syria, against Libya, and many, many people suffer. Since 9/11, it's been in the many millions. The cover-up of how many people have been killed, let alone displaced and injured, absolutely appalling. But there have been some estimates, and they run into the millions. The low-ball numbers have no credence whatsoever. But this is the legacy of America, and it really goes back to the roots of America, Mohammed, where America literally annihilated its native population, except for 1% or 2% of it, over many, many decades. And the slaughter continued abroad against one country after another. The idea that America is a just democratic state is a fantasy that I just can't imagine anybody who has any knowledge of all could possibly believe such stuff. It simply isn't true. It's never been true. And going back to the roots of the country, the first Supreme Court Justice of America, John Jay, said what the other founding fathers believed, or at least most of them, that America should be run by the people who own it, who own it. And the other people simply didn't count. Women were considered childbearers and homemakers. Black people weren't people. They were commodities. And anybody who wasn't a landowner or a property owner was marginalized to nothingness. This is the legacy of America's founding. It continued right up to the present day with all the powerful weapons waging global wars. It really is a terrible legacy. There's been at least one good book written about the history of America, Howard Zinn, A People's History of the United States, in many editions. A million seller for a book that's that important. But Howard is gone. Somebody else needs to pick up the mantle and continue the history. Howard kept continuing it as new events took place, writing many, many editions. And he died in his late 80s. Go ahead.
Yes, and you know, one other myth I think that's important is the notion of the United States government supporting Jews. Unfortunately, in Ukraine, discussed before, the United States helped a coup regime come to power, which was supported by neo-Nazis and fascists. For example, the Right Sector Group, which is a neo-Nazi group, and who gets its political belief. Fascist forces who allied with Hitler during the Second World War. So these people are obviously anti-Jewish, they're anti-humanity, but for the sake of American interests, they supported them. And that shows that, and this, of course, in reality, this is not in the interest of the United States people. This is in the interest of the elites in the United States. Otherwise, American policy in Palestine is not in the interest of the American people. U.S. support for extremists through the Saudis has never been in the interest of the ordinary American people. American support for the coup in Ukraine was not in the interest of the American people. It's hurt the American economy. But it's been in the interest, or at least been perceived to be in the interest, of the elites in the United States. Whether that's really the case or not is debatable. But unfortunately, I think this shows the reality that the United States has never supported Jews, Christians, or Muslims. The American government has supported its own interests. And its interests are not aligned with the interests of ordinary Americans.
Populism is a word that does not exist in the English language as far as America goes. You're absolutely right, Mohammed. America is concerned only with its own interests. I describe it as wealth, power, and privilege, certainly controlling the world's resources, dominating other countries and their governments, having subservient governments beholden to America and other Western interests. This is the history of America. This is the way America operates, and the idea that America cares about ordinary people, of course, that simply isn't so. There's so many examples. What's going on in Ukraine, of course, is absolutely appalling. The book that came out, thankfully, I was able to finish it with the wonderful contributors who were involved, about 22 in all, Flashpoint in Ukraine, How the U.S. Drive for Hegemony Risks World War III. Had I begun the project a month later, it would not have been completed, but the book was completed. I'm very delighted about it. It was published in France. There's a very good chance it'll be published in China. It's very tough getting a Russian publisher. My editor at Clarity Press told me it would be wonderful if it was published in Russia. I thought it was a slam dunk for a Russian publisher, and I honestly believe that the book would be a bestseller in Russia, but in America, it does not get the play that it deserves. The contributors were absolutely wonderful. Everybody took a different aspect of the Ukraine story and really told the story the way people need to know it. And if anybody wants to know the real Ukraine story and all its examples, all the stuff going on through the end of April, and really what's going on now is very similar to what went on up to then, except the fighting continues raging and many more people have died in southeastern Ukraine.
Well, because of the American sanctions, I can't purchase any books from the United States or the EU, so you should send me a copy.
Oh, my God, you can't go to Amazon and buy a book?
No, the American sanctions don't allow me to buy books from the United States or from Europe.
Another part of America's wonderful legacy, Mohammed.
So you should send me your book. I'll be glad to read it.
It's a wonderful book, Mohammed. It really is. And I really owe it. I have a few of my own chapters in it. But the contributors were absolutely marvelous people, and they did cover different aspects of the Ukraine story. And the book was bigger in scope than we envisioned it when we began. But there was so much to discuss, and the people were so marvelous who agreed to contribute to it, that we made the book bigger than we intended at the beginning. And it was priced at $24.95, but on Amazon, they lowballed the price too much. At one point, I saw it at $14.95, and I'm certain there were used copies available in places where you can buy the book. So I know listeners who want to know the Ukraine story, you can get the book dirt cheap, and I really recommend it that you get it, and you'll really know what's going on in Ukraine. It's a big issue because I see Ukraine as a flashpoint that could potentially launch another world war. We had two world wars. Is it out of the question that there could not be a third one? The one key part of the Ukraine story is Ukraine is a really minor part of it. The major part of it is using Ukraine as a pretext to target Russia, to get Ukraine at some point into NATO, to establish NATO bases, namely U.S. ones, on Russia's borders, to have nuclear-armed missiles targeting Russia's heartland, to instigate confrontations that literally could develop into a major one with Russia that possibly could develop into a war, into a state of belligerence, into something that could become World War III. And anybody who knows the history of World War I and II, it's very possible we could have another one. America wants regime change in Russia. Vladimir Putin is pilloried, demonized, vilified because he's independent. He's independent. He believes in national sovereignty. He believes you respect the rule of law. He believes you don't interfere in the internal relations of other countries. Because of this, he's a bad guy. He gets all the bad press in America. As far as I'm concerned, he's a hero. I think he could do a better job economically to help his own people more. But in terms of geopolitics, he's a hero. He prevented a war on Syria, along with the American public, as we discussed. He's done a lot of wonderful things. He used the Security Council veto three times, along with China. He's done important things. He's trying his darndest to end the Ukraine conflict peacefully. He's trying to end global conflicts, other ones, peacefully. He deserves a Nobel Prize, along with Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, who makes John Kerry look like an amateur, and Putin runs rings around Obama, but you'd never know it, following the U.S. press. I wonder if he reads my articles, Mohammed. Vladimir Putin, that is.
Well, another thing that I think is very extraordinary about the U.S. government is that it succeeds in turning its country after country into an antagonist. and then brings them all together. In other words, it is largely because of foolish American policies that Russia and China are growing so close. It is because of foolish American and EU policy that Iran and Russia and Iran and China are growing so close. The Americans antagonized Brazil by spying on the Brazilian president. The Americans antagonized the American government, that is, antagonizes the Argentinian people by trying to put economic pressure on them and by trying to steal as much money from the bankrupt economy of Argentina as possible. So it drives Latin America away from the United States. It drives Africa into the arms of China. It drives Russia, Iran, and China towards one another. American policy is extraordinary, and it is based on a foolish arrogance, the U.S. government, by imagining that it is somehow exceptional, and it has exceptional rights, and it can do things, but no one else is allowed to do it. This offends other countries. This angers other countries, and this causes other countries to unite with one another in opposition to American hegemonic rule. So instead of behaving like an ordinary state and in the interest of its own people, where thus leading to more prosperity and a better American economy, it continues confrontational policies towards country after country and simultaneously, thus wearing itself out by having confrontation in North Africa, in West Asia, in Ukraine, with China, across the board at the same time, at a time when the United States is facing economic crisis. This only serves to make the situation much worse for the United States and create a situation where the economy will decline even further and at a more rapid pace. Yet American politicians cannot see this, one, because they're not the ones who are losing out. It's ordinary Americans. The politicians are becoming richer and richer. The companies are becoming more wealthier and wealthier as ordinary Americans are becoming poor. So they're blind to the reality that's going on in the United States. And on the other hand, it's their arrogance. They constantly think that if they bash the Russians will collapse. Well, Putin is now probably one of the most popular politicians among his own people than any government in the world. His approval ratings right now in Russia are almost 90%, whereas just a few months ago it was 60%. So the Americans have succeeded not in bringing about regime change in Russia. Actually, they've succeeded in making Russia, the Russian president, more popular and the Russian people more united, and the Russians more united with countries that are opposed to the United States. So this policy of arrogance, which has nothing to do with the interests of the American people, is making a tough situation for the American people worse by the day.
Mohammed, America has a penchant for making more enemies than friends. Imagine driving Russia and China together in an increasingly stronger relationship, and the trade deal that the two countries signed a few months ago that will run into tens of billions of dollars over multi-decades, and nobody really knows how big it'll be, because over maybe 30 years, it could be a lot, lot bigger than the numbers that were tossed around when I wrote about it. But we're talking about an enormous amount of money, and it involves more than energy. It involves other products. You combine the strength of a Russia and a China, and that can match America blow for blow any day of the week. And America indeed makes more enemies. It's an empire that will go down just like all the others in history. It's just a matter of time. America gets weaker and weaker. The only thing it excels in is its military. And how many people can you blow up for how much time? But America is its own worst enemy, and it shows. And the people who run America seem only concerned about their own interests. They don't care about anything else. They pass the baton to somebody else and let them worry about the problems that they're creating, that they're creating enormous problems, and ordinary people suffer most. The bankers never had it better. The war profiteers never had it better. The big corporate oligarchs never had it better. But ordinary people are really suffering with things like real employment in America, where nearly one out of four Americans who wants to work can't find a job, and most of the others have temp jobs, or part-time jobs that underpay them, many at poverty wages. And this is the state of the American economy, the strongest economy in the world? Well, I beg to differ. It's a horrible situation. It's getting worse. It's not getting better. And someday the whole thing will blow up, Mohammed. It's a good thing I'm not a kid, because I certainly would not have the opportunities that I had when I came out of grad school in 1960, and I felt like the world was my oyster, just an ordinary kid with nothing going for me. I had no trouble of getting a good job, having a good career, ending up in family business. If I was starting out today the way I did 50 years ago, it would be an entirely different situation. We're just about out of time, Mohammed. Quick last comments.
Well, I know if anyone's been listening to your program today, they would say that a lot of America bashing has been going on. And as a Muslim, I just want to clarify that I don't believe that across the globe, ordinary people, non-Americans, have any hatred or hostility towards America or the American people. And the anger that is directed towards America is directed towards the American government and the political establishment. And also the policies that the United States has pursued outside of the United States has created extremism. And extremism is not something that is inherent in Muslim populations or in any other population.
We are out of time. I've got to end the program. You're absolutely right. My issue with Israel.
Well, have a good day.
Thank you, Mohammed. My issue with Israel isn't the Jewish people. It's the Israeli government. My issue with America is the American government and all the other rogue governments in the world. I wish we had more time. It goes by so fast. Join us next week. We'll be live every Sunday. Two pre-recorded programs you can pick up in the archives, usually either the same day they're recorded, which is Thursdays, or certainly the day after. Tune in. Listen to the Progressive Radio News Hour, the other wonderful programs on PNN, and know what's going on, the big issues, the things you need to know about, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing else.